This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, The Hidden Cost of Science. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of graduate students balance their coursework with research and teaching responsibilities, which can get overwhelming. A survey from 2 years ago found that almost 40% of graduate students showed signs of anxiety and depression, which is much higher than in the general population. Alan Yu looked into the mental health toll of being a scientist in grad school and what students and universities are doing to make things better.
In 2012, Nicole Cabrera Salazar was studying for an exam that was going to decide her immediate future. It was her qualifying exam for her PhD in astronomy, a 6-hour written exam, then an oral exam in front of a panel of professors. Passing means moving on with the PhD. Failing means one more chance before she has to leave the program. In the months leading up to the exam, Nicole's entire life consisted of research, classwork, teaching, and studying. And the pressure to do well in this exam was intense.
When I was studying for it, I started noticing that my handwriting had changed. It was a lot more messy. Like, I used to have really neat handwriting, and I could no longer write in a straight line. And after just a few minutes of writing, my hand would cramp up really painfully, and I couldn't. It's like I almost forgot how to hold a pen in my hand.
Even typing was hard. She went to doctors, got an MRI, even went to a neurologist. They said it's just stress. She started going to therapy. It felt like so much was at stake. Her future, and her success in a field she wanted to get into ever since she was a child. Nicole grew up in Miami, and she was always curious.
When I would go to the fair, and there was this ride called the Gravitron, and it spun around really fast and you would stick to the wall, and I was like, I wonder, how is this possible?
She found answers to her questions in her first physics class in high school. Her family was poor, and Nicole started out going to community college, then transferred to a 4-year college. Finally, she got into a PhD program. But she did not find the environment there very supportive. She felt like people treated her differently, and she wondered if it was because she is a Latina.
There was an instance in which I was accused of cheating by a professor. It was like myself and my colleague, who is a white woman, and it was for a homework assignment, and our answers looked very similar, and the assumption was that I had cheated off of her, when in fact, I had finished my assignment earlier, and she had asked to look at my assignment. The professor was really livid and like did not want to hear anything about this.
At first, she questioned what she had done wrong.
Maybe it was something I did, or maybe it was something I said, you know? Maybe it's me somehow. There were so many aspects of that environment that were telling me that I was wrong, or they were telling me that I just wasn't fit to be a scientist.
Despite the stress that had built up over the years, Nicole passed her PhD exam. She moved on with her research. But the stress and those hints that she didn't belong in science never really went away. In her 4th year, she herself wondered if this was something she wanted to do.
I started to really hate my research. And even though it was my dream, really my dream, to become an astrophysics professor, and I was really committed to the career path and everything, it came to a point where it was not bearable anymore.
She told her advisor about her doubts.
And my advisor said, oh, you know, I'm not surprised, because I don't see that you have a passion for astronomy. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, you put more passion into your baking than you do your astronomy.
Baking was a creative outlet. She would make cakes for people in her department who had birthdays.
I didn't know what I could do, because I literally had planned, my entire life had been planned around becoming an astronomy professor. In the end, I did decide to finish my PhD, if nothing else, because I'm a really stubborn person.
But the stress kept building. She took 4 months of medical leave.
I was so depressed that I couldn't leave my bed. You know, every single task felt impossible.
She had already been in therapy, Now she worked with a psychiatrist.
And it was a really long process to get on the correct medication until I was finally able to kind of feel like myself again. When I took a medical leave of absence, it was really hard to come back to school because everything that, you know, that I had, all the negative experiences that I had had, you know, my brain associated that with my office, with my desk, with my research.
She did graduate with her PhD, and she wondered, did it really have to be like this?
It's like you're trying to walk through a doorframe, but you don't fit through it because it has a very specific shape. And so in order to walk through, you have to cut away parts of yourself.
I talked to a lot of scientists from different backgrounds, in different stages of their academic careers, working in a variety of disciplines. They echoed in their way what Nicole went through, even if they might not have experienced all of it.
A common narrative is that, you know, science is science, and we don't need to take into account our personal identities. And I don't think that could be farther from the truth.
That's Jasmine Childress. She is an ecologist in the sixth year of her PhD at the University of California, Santa Barbara. It seems like that philosophy of science being based on observable facts can sometimes lead to a lack of understanding that science is done by humans, not robots that do experiments. Which means universities, department heads, have to support those humans. Jasmine is biracial. Her mother is white, her father is black. And she and some fellow students of color wanted to improve the academic work environment.
A couple of years ago, myself and two other graduate students of color decided that we wanted to start a diversity, equity, inclusion, and wellness committee in our department that sort of looked at different demographics of folks in our department, as well as their wellness, be it physical and mental wellness. And when we took it to the department, they told us, no, we don't need that. And the one person who we thought would be the best to sort of introduce this idea said that if I spent any of my time talking or thinking about DEI issues, I would get no science done. That's not my job.
And Simone Stewart, a PhD student in mechanical engineering at the same school, says there are people who find those efforts literally laughable.
I say, you know, could you imagine a graduate world where we hired people, where we accepted students based on the empathy that they were able to show in the interview, their desire to collaborate, their desire to make education a safe place for everyone, to say that like everybody here is valuable and we have to make it so everyone here can thrive. And, you know, I tell people that, and the irony is that they laugh and they say, oh, well, you know, that's never going to happen.
Part of this is because of culture. Grad students in science aren't just students. They also teach and do research, and a lot of them work long hours in labs. When they graduate, they often depend on letters of recommendation from their advisors if they want to get anywhere in their field. So if that same person asks you to spend long hours and weekends in the lab, how are you going to say no? There's no HR department you can go to, and there's supervisors, the researchers who teach young scientists, who run the labs where grad students work. They get their jobs mostly based on their success in science. They don't get funding or major awards for being a good mentor or a supportive teacher. Even though a big part of that job involves mentoring students, leading people, that aspect of the job is not always part of why people are hired. But scientists are talking about the lack of support and the stress of graduate school more openly now. I reached out to Russell White. He was Nicole Cabrera-Salazar's PhD advisor. He's a professor of astronomy, and now he's also the director of graduate studies for the astronomy department at Georgia State University. He says, first of all, his department has changed the qualifying exam. That's the exam that was so stressful. Nicole noticed her handwriting change.
Her experience was probably like the experiences of many students in the program. Going through the qualifying exam is definitely one of the more stressful moments.
Russell says it's no longer a six-hour written exam. Now it's about writing a research report and presenting their work like they would at a scientific conference.
It's in some sense encouraging them to get started with research early And if that's really what we're training them to do, why not test them during the qualifying exam?
The idea is that learning those skills is more productive than having them take a long exam on material they have already proven they know. He says he also recognizes that it's important for students to feel comfortable talking about what they're going through. Their department is doing a survey to see how students feel about mental health resources, how inclusive the department is, and what can be improved. A student suggested that idea, based on similar work at the University of California, Berkeley. And schools overall are more open when it comes to talking about mental health. Jen Heemstra is an associate professor of chemistry at Emory University.
It started by just, you know, saying a few words at the start of a group meeting to remind people that, you know, your health, your emotional, physical, mental health and well-being are the most important thing here. You know, we're here to do research, but none of that matters if you don't finish your career as a healthy individual.
Now, that is a part of a lab policy manual, along with sections on taking time off for health concerns, personal emergencies, and work-life balance. It's an open document, and other labs have adopted similar policies. Nicole ended up not becoming a professor of astrophysics after getting her PhD. Now she spends her time helping students who are going through what she went through. She started a consulting company to make scientific workplaces better for people in marginalized groups.
Everywhere I go, every place that I visited, every single one, I have students coming up to me and telling me their stories and telling me about the people who didn't make it and who left. There's no institutional memory of them ever being there, right? And so the department just gets to continue as it always has, but the people who leave, like, their lives are completely impacted. I like to think about it more in terms of, like, what those people have lost, not just their time, but their hopes and their dreams.
That story was reported by Alan Yu.